Shadi Sharif's debut novel, Tea in the Harem, which was published in 1983, may have been the first of a new genre of Franco-African literature. But Sharif's story of a young Algerian immigrant growing up in the suburban ghettos of Paris was barely noticed in the United States, even after it gained a new resonance following the riots in Paris in 2005. Tea in the Harem, which is published by Serpent's Tail Press and a translation by Ed Emery, is the subject of the second installment of our summer reading series devoted to underappreciated literature. And I'm very pleased that it brings Professor Alec Hargraves, the director of the Winthrop King Institute for Contemporary French and Francophone Studies at Florida State University to our show. Hello.
Hello, I'm very glad to join you.
It's not often that a writer can claim to have founded a new genre. Does Sharif really deserve the credit for creating what's called their literature?
Well, he was certainly the first writer and indeed filmmaker to gain widespread public attention for what became known as Burr literature and indeed Burr cinema. Of course, many other writers and filmmakers were also involved, but he was, if you like, the trailblazer, yes.
And that's because he not only wrote this book, but then wound up writing and directing the film version of it?
Right. Interestingly enough, it was actually originally written as a screenplay, and it was one of several screenplays that Sharif had written. He couldn't find anyone who would take it to make a movie out of it, and someone suggested that he tried transferring it into novel form, and that was how he managed to make the breakthrough.
Where does the term Burr come from?
Burr is a piece of slang, a form of slang in French known as verlan. Verlan is back-to-front slang, if you like. So you take the syllables of a word and you turn them around. In this case, it's an inversion of the word arabe, which if you play around with it, becomes burr. And it was an important word originally in the 1970s, before it came to public attention. It was an important word because it enabled young people like Sharif, who were growing up, born of immigrant parents, growing up in disadvantaged urban areas in France, and who are often stigmatized by the way in which people in France use the word Arab. So they invented the word Burr, these young people invented the word Burr, as a way of trying to get themselves out from underneath that stigmatizing gaze. Sadly, since then, since the mid-1980s, when Sharif and others helped to make the word famous, it's actually tended to become something of a stigmatizing term all over again, and it's therefore one that nowadays people such as myself tend to avoid because it's not really very well received by the writers and filmmakers concerned, though it did help them make a breakthrough back in the mid-80s.
Well, it's spelled B-E-U-R, so it has the Euro of European in it as well. In the beginning of the novel, Sharif's protagonist Majid gets into a fight with his mother. And it's kind of similar to what happens with immigrant families all over the world because there are misunderstandings that have to do with cultural differences, even though they're in the same family.
That's true, and the passage that you're referring to is one of the best-known passages in Sharif's novel. However, I think in many ways it's not the most representative passage in the novel. Let me explain what I mean. As you say, we see there a kind of culture clash between his mother, who doesn't speak French very well. She's completely illiterate, as indeed is his father, and she really wants to ship Majid back to Algeria to make a man of him. Whereas Majid doesn't speak much Arabic, he's completely immersed not only in French popular culture, but also in American popular culture. And the two of them, in that sense, just don't get along. But I think if we look in the wider sense at the novel as a whole, it's much less about culture clashes than it is about class issues. This really is a novel about a multi-ethnic, for want of a better word, underclass. It's not a word that I like, but this is really a novel about social deprivation much more than a novel about cultural clashes.
Well, what prevents teenagers like Majid from integrating fully into French society since he's gone to French schools, he speaks French. He's French.
He's French. Like many, many young people of his background, he suffers discrimination at every turn. And we see this repeatedly in the novel. Whenever he tries to find a job, he doesn't get one, and it's pretty clear that this is because of discrimination. And if we look, everything that we know from sociological and other studies is that there has been, sadly, very, very widespread discrimination against young people of North African origin in France, which has shut them out of the labor market. And once they are unemployed, then their chances of integrating themselves into French society disintegrate in reality.
In the late 30s, Louis Ferdinand Céline broke with tradition and started writing in Low French instead of High French. And Sharif does the same thing here, doesn't he?
That's a good parallel. Of course, we're talking about, if you like, the underclass. The difference here is that this is a much more multi-ethnic underclass, and so this is a very raw kind of novel. It's peppered with all kinds of neologisms that come into the French language, partly from the Arabic language, but also from the way in which Majid and others play around with French slang.
So does that make it more difficult to translate?
Diabolically difficult to translate. And of course, the most interesting texts are the ones which are the most difficult to translate.
Mm-hmm. So that's been a problem in appreciating him and translating him into English in the same way that it was a problem with Céline in the 20th century?
Well, there may have been a problem with the translation, I'm not here really to sort of get into a criticism of the existing English translation. There is something actually important that I'd like to say about the way in which this novel is or isn't underappreciated. Of course, as you rightly say, this is a novel which I think if people in the United States wanted to read one single book that would help them to understand the riots of 2005, this would be the novel that I would recommend. Interestingly enough, published way back in 1983, and I think the fact that it retains that relevance in now 2008, a quarter of a century later, shows the neglect, the political neglect, which the banlieue, these disadvantaged urban areas, have suffered in the meantime. However, it should be said that this novel has not been underappreciated in American academic circles. It's actually been very widely studied in American universities and indeed in other Anglophone universities, Britain and elsewhere. Now, what's really interesting there is the contrast with France. It's hardly studied at all in French universities, and that, I think, that neglect, that underappreciation within France is symptomatic of the marginalization which the writing and filmmaking which Sharif and others created, the marginalization which it suffered within France.
We're talking about Mehdi Sharif and his novel Tea in the Harem, which was originally published in 1983 in France. I'm talking with Professor Alec Hargraves of Florida State University. And the novel is set in the suburban housing projects in Paris, which have become symbols of poverty and urban decay. Could you read a passage that you've prepared that gives us a sense of what life there is like?
Sure. When he got down to the lobby of the Tower Block, as he came out of the elevator, Majid went past Pelletier, a guy well into his 50s, proudly holding on a leash, a nasty-looking German shepherd dog. The dog lifted his head towards Majid, who stepped aside. Seeing this, Pelletier smiled contentedly. Fear ruled the hood. People passed it, backwards and forwards, hoping to feel less afraid by making others feel more afraid. It seemed easier to feel and instill fear by shutting yourself up with a German sheepdog than to go out and get to know people. Fear dominated the hood and its inhabitants. With all those young guys on drugs, thieving and raping old ladies, so it was said, everyone was scared. People were going crazy and everyone wanted to protect themselves. There was no shortage of work for locksmiths who were constantly fitting new locks and alarms that were forever going off, screeching and blaring like they were about to explode. There's plenty of choice. The mailboxes are full of ads for all the latest models. There's talk of girls being raped in the Tower Block basements. So when you have a nice big German shepherd dog, you don't feel as scared. You can walk past young guys hanging around the entrance to a Tower Block. You can even brush up against them and provoke them. You almost want to pick a fight when you have a muzzled monster like that. The dog has got only one thing in its head. It wants to attack, and with a muzzle on, the dog's even nastier. The dog's owner is in his element, full of himself. He's no need to fear those young bastards who've nothing better to do than bum around and burn cars. Majid turned back towards Pelletier and his dog. He didn't trust them. You never knew. Pelletier might just let the dog loose when his back was turned. They stared nastily at each other. They were already acquainted. They'd almost come to blows over Pelletier's daughter, a real turn-on for all the guys in the hood with her cute little butt and her curvaceous jeans. Majid really wanted to get it on with her, but old Pelletier was determined she would never be screwed by an Arab. As he walked out of the building, Majid zipped up his jacket against the cold. He lit a cigarette and crossed from Azalea Street, on which his tower block stood, into Acacia Street. All the streets in the hood were named after flowers. The whole project was officially named Flower City. As far as the eye could see, there was nothing but concrete, cars, urine sterns, and dog crap. There were tall towers and long blocks, all completely soulless. No joy, no fun, just moaning and misery.
It sounds great. When were these projects built?
Well, the projects were thrown up in the 60s and 70s. Ironically, the guys who actually did the manual labor were immigrant workers who initially had great difficulty getting access to them. But during the 70s and 80s, they got into the poorer end of this housing market and indeed came to dominate it. And by the early 80s, when the novel was published, those projects had become symbols, if you like, in the mind of many French people of the alien nature of this minority ethnic presence. It seemed to stand for everything that wasn't going well in France.
Sharif writes, the children grow up as part of the cement and the concrete. They grow up and they begin to take on the characteristics of concrete. They're dry and cold and hard, to all appearances indestructible, but they've got hidden cracks.
Yes, the novel in many ways is about a place more than it's about people. Now, obviously, that's an exaggeration. There are some very memorable characters in the novel, but the point that I'm making is the novel is about the way in which these people are dominated by the place they live in, this dead-end world of the banlieue, the cité, what in American English you would call the ghettos or the hoods.
And are they all that much different than some of the bad ghettos, projects that we've seen in some parts of some of the larger American cities?
For many years, French policymakers said that there was no such permissible comparison and that as long as French policymaking continued as it was, the nation would be completely safe from these ghettos. But when you actually reread Charest's novel, published, let's remember, 25 years ago, it reads just like a description of South L.A. or some areas of Chicago. There's one, I think, two significant differences. One of them is that these spaces are not as vast in most French cities as they are in some American cities. And the other, I think, very significant difference is that, generally speaking, in the U.S., especially where African Americans are concerned, these tend to be what we might call monoethnic urban areas. That is to say, dominated by people from a single racial or ethnic group, African Americans, say. But in France, they tend to be much more multi-ethnic. You've got not only North Africans, you have people from the Caribbean, people from other parts of Africa, from Asia, and indeed what we might loosely call poor whites. So it's a much more multi-ethnic setting than many of the hoods in the United States.
Can you explain the title, Tea in the Harem? Isn't it a French pun?
It is a French pun. It refers to a kind of linguistic mix-up, a malapropism, which occurs when one of the young Arabs in the story, called Balou, is asked by his French school teacher to write on the blackboard what in English we call Archimedes' principle. In French, that is le théorème d'Archimède. And instead, Balou writes le théorème, harem, d'Archimède. Ahmed, which literally means tea in the harem of Archi Ahmed. And of course, what this means is that instead of being offered what we might initially expect from a title, Tea in the Harem, some kind of Orientalist luxury. What we actually get is the exact opposite. It's the hard-nosed reality of social deprivation in what we might call the underbelly of contemporary France. So, yes, Charef is playing with the reader's expectations, and of course, very importantly, he's playing with two languages. He's showing that he can play with those languages. He's not, if you like, the victim of cultural dissonance. He actually can construct from it cultural hybridity.
We have very little time, but how did the film version of Tea in the Harem do? I know it won a César, the French Oscar, for Best Directorial Debut, but did it? Was it a success as a film?
Yes, it was. It was, I think, at least as successful as the novel. As you say, it won a César. And it certainly became the model for what would later become known as banlieue cinema. The best example of that was the 1995 movie of Mathieu Kassovitz, which I'm sure many of your listeners will have seen.
Alec Hargraves is at Florida State University and also has won the French Legion of Honor Award. Thank you so much for talking with us today on Underappreciated.
My pleasure.